"How now?" said Scrooge, caustic and cold as ever. "What do you want with me?"
"Much." Marley's voice. No doubt about it.
"Who are you?"
"Ask me who I was."
"Who were you then?" said Scrooge, raising his voice.
"In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley."
"Can you sit down?" asked Scrooge, looking doubtfully at him.
"I can."
"Do it, then."
The ghost sat down on the opposite side of the fireplace, as if he were quite used to it.
"You don't believe in me,"
observed the ghost.
"I don't," said Scrooge.
"What evidence would you have of my reality beyond that of your own senses?"
"I don't know," said Scrooge.
"Why do you doubt your senses?"
"Because," said Scrooge, "a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheats. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are." "Who and what are you?" Scrooge demanded.
"I am the ghost of Christmas past."
"Long past?" inquired Scrooge, observant of its dwarfish stature.
"No, your past." Perhaps Scrooge could not have told anybody why, if anybody could have asked him, but he had a special desire to see the spirit in his cap, and begged him to be covered.
"What?" exclaimed the ghost. "Would you so soon put out with worldly hands the light I give? Is it not enough that you are one of those whose passions made this cap, and force me through whole trains of years to wear it low upon my brow?"
Scrooge reverently disclaimed all intention to offend, or any knowledge of having wilfully bonneted the spirit at any period of his life. He then made bold to inquire what business brought him there.
"Your welfare," said the ghost.
Then all the Cratchit family drew round the hearth in what Bob Cratchit called a circle, and at Bob Cratchit's elbow stood the family display of glass, and Bob served it out with beaming looks, while the chestnuts on the fire sputtered and cracked noisily. Then Bob proposed,
"A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us."
"God bless us, everyone," said Tiny Tim, the last of all.
"Spirit," said Scrooge, with an interest he had never felt before. "Tell me if Tiny Tim will live."
"I see a vacant seat,"
replied the ghost,
"in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die."
The parlor was the space behind the screen of rags. The woman who had already spoken threw her bundle on the floor and sat down in a flaunting manner on a stool, crossing her elbows on her knees and looking with a bold defiance at the other two.
"What odds, then? What odds, Mrs. Dilber?"
said the woman.
"Every person has a right to take care of themselves. He always did."
"That's true indeed,"
said the laundress.
"Well, then don't stand staring as if you was afraid, woman. Who's the wiser? We're not going to pick holes in each other's coats, I suppose."
"No, indeed."
"Very well, then. Who's the worse for the loss of a few things like these? Not a dead man, I suppose."
"No, indeed,"
said Mrs. Dilber, laughing.
"They're not torn down," cried Scrooge. "They are not torn down, rings and all. They are here. I am here. The shadows of the things that would have been may be dispelled. They will be. I know they will."
His hands were busy with his garments all this time, turning them inside out, putting them on upside down, tearing them, mislaying them, making them parties to every kind of extravagance.
"I don't know what to do," cried Scrooge, laughing and crying in the same breath. "I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world. Hello here. Whoop! Hello!"